You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The U.S. drone war that President Obama inherited was largely directed at targets in Iraq and Afghanistan, but it's been expanded during his years in office to Pakistan, Somalia, and Yemen. Although his administration has not been transparent about its use of drones, it has acknowledged some of the unintended casualties and that there remains uncertainty about pinpointing exact targets. In her latest film, National Bird, director-producer Sonia Kennebec follows three whistleblowers determined to break through the silence. It opens tomorrow at Cinema Village. For more details about that, you can visit our show page at wmyc.org/Lopate. I'm pleased to welcome Sonia Kennebec to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me here.
The whistleblowers are U.S. military veterans who are dealing with guilt feelings about having participated in the killings of faceless people in foreign countries. So they decide to speak up publicly despite the possible consequences?
Exactly. It's they were all taking a risk in doing this, just as myself as well, because it is not a good time for whistleblowers to, you know, go public and speak the truth. Obama has been the president who's prosecuted more whistleblowers than all previous administrations before him. And now everyone, of course, is very worried what's going to happen now after this election.
Do they sign anything that says that they won't speak in public about what they've gone through, what they've experienced?
Well, they all had, all of the whistleblowers in my film, everyone who worked in the drone program, these veterans, they all had top secret clearances. So we really had to, walk a line and do this balancing act, because all three whistleblowers in my film are actually, you know, showing their faces. They're not some shadow on the wall, but they're going public. They are in the U.S. And we worked with lawyers very early on to just make sure that everyone is as safe as possible.
How did you meet Heather, Daniel, and Lisa?
I didn't just meet them.
Did they present themselves to you?
No, I found them. Heather was the first whistleblower who I found. She was not public then. During the production of the film, about a year into filming, she published an article, an op-ed on Guardian.com. But when I started filming with her, she was just in Pennsylvania. She had just left the military. And I found her on a closed group, something on Facebook or social media, and I saw a photograph of a young woman who held up a sheet of paper and covered up most of her face. You could only see her eyes. And on the sheet of paper, it said something like, not everything you hear about the drone program is true. I know what I'm talking about. And I was wondering, is this woman, it was obviously a woman, is she the person who knows about the drone program? So I did some detective work. I cross-referenced people because this photo was posted by someone else. And eventually, after a few weeks, I saw a small profile photo of this woman, Heather, and I recognized her eyes, and I contacted her and said, do you know about the drone program? And she responded, yes, I worked in it. And I asked her to meet and drove out to Pennsylvania.
You say she comes from a small town in Pennsylvania. Why did she join the military?
I think...
And what branch?
Yeah, she was in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And she actually joined specifically to be part of the drone program, because she actually says in the film, I saw the posters with the drones and I thought, this is really cool, badass. And, that was one of the reasons, but also she really wanted to get out of Pennsylvania, to serve a country, to do something good for America, and to have more opportunities in her life. And I think that's very representative for many people who enlist.
You include a drone strike recruitment and training video in your documentary. How did you gain access to that? Can anybody find that on the internet?
Are you talking about a recruitment video?
Yes.
Yeah.
It makes the drone war look like a video game.
Exactly, yes. And that's, you know, what how the Air Force promotes it. It looks, you know, very exciting, very clean, and also, you know, it's they make it seem, you know, very black and white. You know, on the one side you have, you know, the good guys, and then on the other side you have the terrorists. But what I wanted to show with this film is that it's, you know, it's not black and white. There are a lot of shades of gray. And I'm, you know, no one is saying that drones cannot be used for good things. For example, you know, search and rescue missions, you know, humanitarian disasters, also overwatch for troops. But there is this other side to them that, you know, as one of my protagonists says, it makes this war really, really messy.
What skills did Heather possess that made her a fit for the drone program, and what kind of training did she receive?
So Heather was an imagery analyst, meaning that she had to analyze the live video coming from the drones and make, you know, a very important call saying, you know, whoever I'm seeing on this video is, you know, carrying a shovel or a weapon, you know, as a terrorist or a civilian. And, you know, that call, you know, leads, you know, eventually is part, you know, leads into the decision of, you know, killing people or a group of people.
But she's not the one who flew the drone or pushed the button that launched the bomb.
Exactly.
She identified the targets.
Yes, correct. And so what I wanted to show with this film is, you know, there's not just a pilot and the co-pilot, but there's a group of people who are involved. The drone program is a massive program that, you know, eventually, or actually now is already, you know, relevant for people in the United States. Because what I also show in the film is my other protagonist, Lisa, she worked on the large surveillance system that's behind the drones. And that is a global system.
Now, she didn't just recommend that the bomb be dropped. Didn't she also stay around to see if the kill had been made?
Heather did. And
so she watched the families and friends come to retrieve their dead.
She had to first count the body parts and, you know, do a battle damage assessment, essentially. And then she would continue. And, you know, these drones loiter for hours. And then, you know, she would watch the families come and, you know, and mourn as well, and funerals. And that is what is what some, you know, veterans have told me is a big change to, you know, older veterans, to previous wars. Because, you know, with, like, fighter pilots, they would fly in, they would drop a bomb, and then they would fly away. But, you know, here we have these very young people, 18 to 25, who are sitting on these bases in the United States, but they don't just participate in killing people, but they watch the whole aftermath.
Now, she says that she felt she was suffering from post-traumatic disorder symptoms. Did she see a psychologist?
That is, you know, her storyline in the film. So, you know, National Bird is what some people say. It's not what they expected when they saw the film, because it's not a, you know, it's not a documentary where you know, have people in suits in front of, you know, bookshelves, but it's really about the people directly impacted by the drone war. So the people who are fighting this war, but also the people in the target countries. And Heather, you know, her struggle throughout the film, her journey is really trying to get support and to get help, because she really was struggling a lot with her job, and she was asking for help. But, you know, because of the top secret clearances that, you know, the people have in the program, it's very hard to even talk to a psychologist or psychiatrist, because they, you know, often don't have these clearances. So these young people do not, you know, they cannot talk about the things that are bothering them.
I'm speaking with Sonia Kennebec, who has made a film called National Bird, which opens tomorrow at Cinema Village. Well, but her psychiatrist, or psychologist, I guess it was, recommended that she be removed from her job because she was a high risk for suicide. What happened?
The Heather is saying in a film that her first sergeant was informed about that, and they continued keeping her on the job because they were undermanned. And, you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of demand for drone people because drones are used very heavily in, you know, in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, but also in countries like Somalia, Yemen, Pakistan, and elsewhere around the world. And these are, you know, Heather had a very, very long training. She was very good in her job. And
she was in Afghanistan?
She was fighting a war in Afghanistan from the United States. And she was trained very, very well, and you know, had almost, I think, a year of training. So the Air Force, from what she has been saying, has been keeping her on until the very, very last day, until she left the military.
Did she just run out her term, or did she do things to get herself released?
She got an honorable discharge, mm-hmm. so she ran out her term. But what I actually wanted to add is that, you know, Heather was on a suicide watch list. Now she has been, you know, she has been actively, you know, trying to get help, and she has been asking for help. But she lost three of her colleagues, fellow airmen, to suicide.
She says that some of the things that plague her, the memories that plague her, are the adrenaline rush when the bomb would explode, and then the empty void of seeing someone die. So she felt a lot of guilt?
Yes. I think one of the things with the drone program and the people, you know, who struggle with their experiences, post-traumatic stress disorder, is, you know, a lot of guilt around not knowing exactly who they kill or how many people they're killing, because, you know, if you drop a bomb on a compound, on a house, you know, do you really know who's inside? And then the other thing is that, you know, I think it's very different from people who are in combat, and no one says that, you know, the experiences of combat soldiers can be compared to the people in the drone program. You know, I think these are, you know, different experiences. But what people in my film have told me, what they have been struggling with, is actually the fact that they are in safety, that they are in the U.S., they are, you know, fighting a war abroad, they are killing people, some of them, you know, are participating in killing more people than most combat soldiers ever will. But then, you know, they are not under threat. They can never say, oh, I was, you know, defending myself, or I was in danger. But instead, they are in safety. They leave, you know, after a 12-hour shift, they leave this secret environment. They go home to their families, their kids, you know, go to Walmart or Starbucks. And I think that in itself is very schizophrenic.
My guest is Sonia Kennebec, who's been an independent documentary filmmaker and investigative journalist for a decade or more. Her films primarily deal with international politics and human rights issues and have received awards and critical acclaim. The most recent documentary, Sex Made in Germany, is about the German prostitution industry, and that received great reviews, was official selection of the Montreal World Film Festival in 2013. Her latest is called National Bird, and it opens tomorrow at the Cinema Village, and we will continue our conversation after this. We are back with director-producer Sonia Kennebec, who was named one of the 25 new faces of independent film by Filmmaker magazine. Her latest film is National Bird, which opens tomorrow at the Cinema Village. And if you want more information about it, go to our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate. Daniel is the next whistleblower we meet in your film. Before he joined the military, he was homeless, and he says he was on his last legs, and he wasn't an admirer of the military. So why did he join?
He joined out of a very desperate situation, and he's very honest about it in the film. He really didn't see another option, for one thing. But, you know, I don't think you really just join only, you know, out of desperation. But I do believe that he also wanted to, you know, serve his country. All whistleblowers in my film, they speak out because they want to, you know, serve the public, and that was, you know, is the main reason. No one wants to become a whistleblower, you know, to be in the public eye and under public scrutiny, but really out of, you know, a a feeling that they want to do something good for their country.
He wound up with a high-level security clearance as a private contractor in an elite force in the military. And he was already, he still had a top security clearance when you were filming him?
Yes.
So did that put him into any danger? Because he's extremely cautious while he's talking on camera. Very worried, he seems to be, about what he couldn't say.
Yes, he is very, very careful, you know, partly because he still had top secret clearance when we started filming, and also because of his work in the drone program. He was a signals intelligence analyst, and that means that you work a lot with technology, and that's, you know, where you get into the really sensitive area. There are things that you cannot talk about on camera.
Did he consult with a lawyer while you were making the film?
I consulted with lawyers very early on. From the first development fund that I received, I actually hired a First Amendment lawyer to understand how I could best protect my sources, the protagonists in the film. And then I also started working very early on with a whistleblower attorney, Jessen Radek, who also represents Edward Snowden. And she actually now represents all three whistleblowers in my film.
What were the criteria for being selected to join this elite force that Daniel joined? He was trained in the military, but he was still working for a private contractor?
So he enlisted for the Air Force, and then he did his, you know, full time. I think it was 4 years, and then he got an honorable discharge. And then he continued, you know, he got an offer to work as a private contractor, and that's what he was doing when I started filming with him. And I think the qualifications for people to work in a drone program, from, you know, all of the people who I have met, is that, you know, you have to be intelligent. You're working a lot with, you know, equipment, and the people who I interviewed, they usually scored very high on the entrance exams, and they have, you know, they are very smart people.
A listener was confused by something you said. I think I understood what you were saying. She wonders about whether a drone strike can be authorized when someone is carrying a shovel. I thought the point you were making was that Heather had to determine whether someone was carrying a shovel, which would have made them just an innocent civilian, or whether what that civilian was, what that person was carrying, was a weapon.
Exactly. I was trying to, you know, explain a little bit how the job, Heather's job, looked like. She had to analyze the live video, and really, you know, make that determination from a very far distance.
How, you know, far above is the drone from the person who's walking down the road?
Well, you know, that's one of the things where you get into a sensitive area. You know, there are no exact numbers published, but I think a very good way to describe it is that people in the target countries have told us that you often don't see the drones because they're so far from the ground. Even on a sunny day, you don't see the drones, but you hear them.
And then what they're looking at is very grainy video in black and white. So they have to make determinations based on some minimal information.
Yeah, it's one of the problems. Of course, you know, depending on what the strike is and what area, there might be additional intelligence that is coming in from, you know, all kinds of sources. But, you know, and Heather's specific job was to analyze the imagery. And the video... of course we all have HD cameras, but I always imagine it to be a lot like the internet, where when you have a lot of drones up in the sky operating, you have to transfer all of this video. You know, you have a bandwidth problem. So, you know, we all know it, when a lot of people are on the same internet, your video quality just gets worse.
Can you explain Daniel's job in signals intelligence? What did he do?
Well, in the film, he tries to explain it a little bit. It is basically, you know, using communication signals to find targets.
Your third subject, Lisa, was part of the DGS, or Distributed Ground System. I love these names. And that spans the globe and eats data? What does that mean?
So the DGS, and its distributed ground system, doesn't really tell you a lot of what the system does. So I think the easiest way to imagine it is this gigantic surveillance network that really spans the globe and just sucks up and uses all of this data. And interestingly, the DGS itself is classified as a weapons system. So in my mind, it is just as important to talk about the DGS as it is to talk about the drones that are connected to the DGS system, because it does this whole surveillance affects us all, our privacy and Lisa, and that's kind of just to show you the magnitude of this war. Lisa shows in the film a medal, a commendation medal she received from the Air Force, and it says in the medal that she participated, the system that she worked on, she participated in identifying 121,000 insurgent targets during the operations Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan. And that is only within a 2-year period. So she says, multiply, add up the numbers and see what's really going on.
So she says that she has, she's part of a global system that gathers information around the world and then shoots people. That means that instead of capturing potential terrorists or enemies, we now just shoot them? We hope that we're shooting the right ones?
That is part of it. These missions are often, especially for high-value targets, are kill or capture missions. When a drone shoots someone, especially or drops a bomb, shooting sounds very precise. It's often, large bombs that are being dropped, some of them on houses, compounds, as the military calls them. Groups of people can be killed. And capturing is not what drones do.
I'm speaking with filmmaker Sonia Kennebec. Her movie National Bird opens tomorrow at the Cinema Village. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. When he's talked about the drone strikes, President Obama has said that the standard is very high to ensure the safety of civilians. But after you talk to Heather, Daniel, and Lisa, do you believe that's true?
Could you just repeat that, please?
Yeah. The president says that the standards are very high. Do Heather, Lisa, and Daniel feel that the standards are very high?
No, and that's exactly, the reason they are all speaking out. Because they feel, the need to really educate the public, to bring more transparency into the drone program. I think one of the problems is that we don't really know what the standards are. We don't really know how many people are being killed by drones, how many of those people who are being killed are civilians. And I think it's very important for the public to have this information, because we have to, decide and determine, if this type of warfare is effective. I think this is one of the times where, technology and weapons technology in particular has outpaced our laws and regulations and maybe even our moral standards. And I think we really have to catch up now.
Heather actually has videos that you use in the film to demonstrate just how blurry the images are. First of all, was that a problem? Would they have been classified?
So some of the videos that we are showing are videos that have been leaked on the internet. Some of them have been also, have been distributed by the Air Force. The Air Force sometimes, distributes these videos to show how they are killing terrorists. And they are just, because I, with these types of videos, it's really, really hard to tell the exact source and what they are showing. And so they are a representation of, how it would look like.
Is it true that no single governing body oversees the drone program? This is not part of the Air Force or the Army or the Navy or the Marines?
Well,
the NSA?
What
CIA?
What my protagonist was trying to say with that is that, you know, this weapon is a global weapon. And there needs to be international and global regulation for it, we believe, because we are crossing state lines. Drones can fly anywhere and shoot people anywhere. And that is something that I think is really drastically changing the type we are, you know, the way that we are waging wars. And I think it's absolutely necessary that, you know, the countries get together to really govern this type of warfare, because it is, you know, it is a form of assassination. So
do we have any indication as to whether the person we've killed actually is the person we should have targeted?
That is,
do we check afterward?
That is exactly the question, or one of the points that one of my protagonists is pointing out. You know, does anybody go down there and ask for somebody's driver's license? Do we really know who has been killed? And then, you know, my protagonists have been saying, you know, they have these lists, and then, you know, people would, you know, like, it would be said that someone was killed, you know, a name was taken off the list and then would reappear on the list. And then, you know, apparently, you know, the wrong people have been killed, or the same person, you know, has been killed multiple times.
Heather published an article when she finally decided that she wanted to speak out. She published an article in The Guardian and got a lot of responses, and a lot of them were critical of her.
She actually says in the film that she feels like she's in a very difficult situation because, you know, the left, people on the left have called her, you know, or calling people like her baby killers. And people on the right say, you know, you shouldn't have any problems with post-traumatic stress disorder because you're not on the ground. You know, you're not in places like Afghanistan. So, you know, she really speaks out to raise awareness for, you know, people like herself who are really struggling and traumatized and who are, you know, some of them have committed suicide. But yeah, you know, she feels like there's very, very little support. And yeah, the article that she wrote went viral. We filmed with her the day when she wrote it, the day when it was coming out. But it also, you know, really shows that there is a lot of interest for these subjects because, you know, drones will affect everyone, including people in the U.S.
You mentioned that most of these people are 18 to 24, so they are engaged in a lot of killing at a very early age. Is that one of the reasons that we see so many of them committing suicide afterward? I mean, does the military recognize PTSD from having been engaged in the drone program?
So that is, you know, one of Heather's that's really her journey. That's what she's trying to achieve in the film, to get that recognition. She fights for it, you know, very hard. I think she is just incredibly courageous for going, you know, public to raise awareness for these issues. And she says she's doing it because, you know, some of her veteran friends are not around anymore, are just too drunk to do anything. That's what we are going to reveal at the very, very end of the film.
And we won't reveal it here.
Correct.
But thank you so much for coming by to talk about the film. Sonia Kennebec is the writer and writer, producer, and director of National Bird, which opens tomorrow at the Cinema Village. You can find out more information about it on our show page at wmyc.org/Lopate. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you.